Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly opportunity to get together as blind and partially sighted people and explore the world of technology. How's it going for you? What's working? What's not working? And what could be working a little bit better? Let us know. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk, that's T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K @rnib.org.uk is how you contact us with your questions, comments, or anything else you like. Coming up this week on the show, how good is AI at generating audio description? We'll be speaking with one blind YouTuber who is using artificial intelligence to make his content more accessible. Plus, User Vision explain how their web testing is helping developers to create websites that are more accessible to all. Joining us, as ever, are our co-hosts, Hubert Pavalkovich, Callum Stoneman and Jackie Brown. And of course, September has been a busy time for Apple announcing new hardware. And I'm keen to hear from each of you about your reaction to those announcements. It's 10 years of the Apple Watch. Hubert, what do you think?
I had a good eye on this because I was, well, hoping slash expecting to see something landmark. You know, when we had the iPhone 10, it was that big transformation of no home button and Face ID. The Apple Watch Series 10, I'm underwhelmed, but there is some new stuff available with it. It's better than nothing, it's what I would say.
What is new, and particularly from an accessibility point of view?
The charging speed, you can charge it faster, which is quite nice. From an accessibility point of view, I'd say you've got a bit of a bigger screen. The smallest size is 42 millimetres, so that's a whole 1 millimetre bigger than the 41 millimetre smallest size. And the biggest size is 46, so you've got a bit more screen space. If you're a voiceover user, that can be quite helpful.
Oh God, it's like wearing Big Ben.
Yeah.
Well, yes, it is. The smallest size is still rather large. The one big health feature, though, I have a few friends who suffer from this. So sleep apnea detection is quite major. So what this will be is your watch will analyse your data, sleep data from the last 30 days, and Apple will notify you if it sees a bigger than usual frequency of what it calls breathing disturbances. It will then alert you that you may be suffering with sleep apnea, obviously then encouraging you to seek advice from a medical professional as to obviously confirm it, because these things are naturally just guidelines rather than medical diagnosis. It is a thinner Apple Watch as well, therefore can be a bit lighter. There is no stainless steel version anymore, so even the more high-end product is a bit lighter. It can be used in more extreme water environments as well, which kind of was similar to the Apple Watch Ultra. The good thing is about this as well, it has the depth app available on this watch, and if you submerge it, it will actually tell you the water temperature and the depth as well, which I always wanted to know, because if I go into water, I would like to be able to see that sort of information.
Does that work with voiceover? Actually, your speak a bit muffled.
Reading my mind, Callum.
Well, that'd be the interesting part, because I remember trying to use it with Waterlock, and obviously you can't really do that. So I'd be curious to, yes, jump into a pool of water and see what happens. Yes,
we'll let you do that. And I think the other thing worth mentioning from an accessibility point of view as well, they've got some tech in there to improve the audio on phone calls. So if you make a phone call from your Apple Watch or receive a call, the other person should be able to hear you a little bit better.
Which is quite nice, because I'm often a bit put off using the Apple Watch for phone calls. I rarely have used that. I don't know about the rest of you, if you've used it a bit more. I don't know. I've always been a bit apprehensive, but the speaker's a bit better. You can now play audio through the internal speaker if you so choose.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that might be useful when you listen to your Tech Talk podcast as well.
I'm still not sold on a watch at all. I don't have one, and I'm still, all these years down the line, I don't know why, really. I'm just not sold on an Apple Watch at all, to be honest.
Changed my life, Jackie Brown. Honestly, I mean, it really has.
I believe you. Yeah, I believe you.
Yeah, encouraged me to move a bit more and You know, keep an eye on my sort of health metrics. I think it really is a, you know, a fitness and health device.
It is.
Primarily.
Yeah.
So if that interests you, then.
Yeah, it is. I get hourly reminders of my laziness.
Yes.
There we are.
I was told on my train today that I need to get up and start moving, and I'm like, that's a bit tricky, but okay.
Right, Callum, let's come to you. You've been finding out about AirPods.
Yeah, well, there's two parts for this, and I'll do them one at a time. So we did get some new AirPods. I'm not sure I quite understand this lineup, to be honest. So we've got the AirPods 4 standard model, which are basically a minor upgrade from the AirPods 3. They say they're slightly smaller. I don't know if that means the earbuds themselves or the case or both, but slightly smaller and better audio quality. But that's about it. And then there's also the AirPods 4 with noise cancelling. And they are basically exactly the same, but with active noise cancelling. And they come with a case that supports wireless charging as well, whereas the base model case only has USB-C for charging. But you've also got the Pro 2, which are not new, but they're still on sale, and they have things like noise cancelling and transparency mode, which is like the opposite of noise cancelling, that lets real world sounds in. Adaptive mode that tries to kind of do a bit of both. This is all on Pro 2. So I don't really understand this kind of middle option with the AirPods 4, to be honest. It seems a bit odd. It's kind of like a half Pro.
So Callum, tell us about this hearing aid stuff, because surely your AirPods can't replace your hearing aids, can they?
Well, this is something that really grabbed me. So this is not on the 4s that we were just talking about. This is only on the Pro 2, as far as I know. I'm just going to read this because this sums it up really well. This is from one of the summaries of the event. So it says, iOS 18 will include a hearing test that will take about 5 minutes to complete. Once done, iOS will generate a customized profile and apply it to your earbuds. So your AirPods in this case. From then on, whenever you're listening to audio from your phone or from in the real world, because they've got this transparency mode on the Pros, the AirPods will boost certain frequencies that your test determined you have trouble hearing. And it says Apple is waiting on regulatory approval, which they expect to happen within a few weeks, to be able to offer AirPods Pro 2 as hearing aids. So I've got a hearing impairment as well.
I think they've got that approval in the US, haven't they now?
It's in the US, yeah. I was going to say, I assume this will be US only for now. Not the feature, but the medical approval to have them as hearing aids. But, I mean, I've got a hearing impairment as well as the blindness, and I wear hearing aids. And they're okay. You know, they're made for iPhone ones, so my voiceover comes through, and podcasts and phone calls and music and stuff if I want to. They're pretty terrible for music, to be honest, but you can let them off with that. You know, they're designed to be hearing aids, right? So, you know, it's fine. But then, you know, they work fairly well, but there's an app to control them where you can, I mean, obviously your audiologist has to adjust them. You can't do many adjustments yourself, really, apart from flicking through different programs. There's an app to control certain options, certain programs and volumes, but that's pretty much totally inaccessible. So, I mean, if I could just wear my AirPods as hearing aids, that sounds pretty cool. How good they'll be compared to proper hearing aids, if you like, I'm not sure, but it's very interesting.
And can you use AirPods, Callum, with your hearing? Because not everybody with a, you know, hearing impairment can use AirPods. They don't work for everybody, do they? But for you, do they?
Yeah, because mine are that small. They're just a tiny little thin kind of wire that goes kind of in the top of my ears. So the AirPods quite nicely kind of slot in underneath them almost. So yeah, I can still use them. And I will say as well, when you put on, I only use transparency or the adaptive mode. If you put on noise cancelling, but you've also got hearing aids in, that creates a weird mix of audio. Two things trying to do the exact opposite to each other.
Right.
But yeah, it does work pretty well. So I am interested in this. I mean, I imagine, like you said, surely these can't be used as, you know, if you had, I mean, mine's really mild. If you had really severe hearing loss, then, you know, there must be a limit to what these can do, because obviously hearing aids isn't their primary function. But still, it's grabbed me. I'm interested.
And finally, let's come to you, Jackie Brown. Your reaction to the new iPhone 16 lineup announced last week. Will you be buying one?
No, not this year. I bought an iPhone 15 Pro last year at the time they came out. I was really excited about USB-C. I was glad to say goodbye to the Lightning port. So no, I'm not going to buy one this year. But there are some interesting things going on with in terms of iOS. Obviously, iOS 18 comes out very shortly. And there are some really interesting things going on in that with Siri and so on. So there are four phones this year, as there were last year. So we've got the 16, the 16 Plus, and we've got the Plus Pro versions of the 16 as well. So there are some interesting features on the phones. One is going to be another button that is going to allow you to do more with the photography. Apparently, you're going to be able to press the button, and I think when the Apple Intelligence is available, you're going to be able to, you know, point to things that, that hopefully it will describe around you, but how, and photographs as well, but how that's going to work, I'm not quite sure, because it almost sounded on the sort of demonstrations and the Apple event, it kind of sounded like you were going to get something like Be My Eyes or Be My AI or Seeing AI. And I don't know. I just, I can't believe it would be as good as that. If it was, I'd have one like a shot, but I'm not quite sure about this. Has anybody else got any thoughts on this?
Yeah. So this is the visual intelligence, isn't it? Where you can,
yeah,
by the sounds of it, you can point your camera at something, hold this button down, and it will search for it essentially. Or try and get information. And yeah, I mean, it sounds good, but we just have to wait and see how good it actually is. I mean, we've kind of seen this with the Meta Ray-Bans, haven't we? Like, their AI can read stuff if you ask it to, but it's not reading it. Like, I hear there's people who still can't get it to read full documents, for example, the same way that, say, Be My Eyes would.
It does a summary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I imagine it'd be something like that.
The new camera control, my understanding is it's a capacitive button, so it doesn't actually physically move. You know, it's a bit like, you know, what happened with the home button. No. There'll probably be a haptic when you're using voiceovers, so it gives the impression that you've activated it. So it'll be interesting to see how that works with voiceover.
I was just wondering as well, I think USB-C on the iPhone 16 range is going to be faster as well. I think there are some slight differences to the Pro versions with the camera. Not a great deal, but I think the Pro versions, don't they have LiDAR, which continues to operate?
Yeah, they do, yeah. The LiDAR is in the Pros, which I've not used as much as I thought I would, to be honest. I've got a 13 Pro.
No, I haven't.
And I was kind of thinking, well, I'm not going to upgrade this year. Unless Apple Intelligence is, you know, really mind-blowing, then I'm not going to upgrade yet. Maybe next year. But I was kind of thinking to myself, would I go with the Pro? Would I bother? But then I feel like, say if I was upgrading this year, I'd not bother with the Pro, get a 16. And then in a couple of, maybe next year or in a couple of months, something amazing would come in with LiDAR and I'd be kicking myself.
My big takeaway from all of this was that new hardware was announced, but a lot of the functionality isn't going to be there day one, and that actually you're buying hardware with what, you know, the promise of what might come later on. So jury's out, I think, for a lot of folk. Let us know. Are you planning to upgrade? Have you been at all interested in those announcements last week? Or you're quite happy with what you've got? Or maybe you're an Android person and you've just got yourself a new Pixel 9. We'd love to hear about that as well. So let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert, Callum, Jackie, thank you very much. AI is never far from our minds at the moment, of course. How do we use AI to access the world around us? Well, somebody who has been playing with this quite a bit is Nathan Edge, who is a blind YouTuber from the West Midlands. And Nathan recently got AI to audio describe the title sequence to his YouTube channel. And Nathan joins us now. Welcome into RNIB Connect Radio, Nathan. Good to have you with us. Was there a particular moment or experience that really drove you to explore this technology and use it for audio description?
I mean, I just I love it, to be honest. So ever since it came out, which doesn't seem that long ago, really. It's still in its infancy, isn't it, really? But I love playing around with it. I think the turning point for me was when the app Be My Eyes, I think it's been spoke about a lot on this program, but once they integrated the AI feature so it could describe photos, I've spent so much time going through my camera roll on my phone, going through all my old photos, and now they're now all organized. I think I'm on about 3,800 at the moment. They're all organized into folders, all with descriptions, captioned and everything. But I love that because it's just opened up, all those sort of memories, which I was there, to be a part of it. But now I can actually look back at them and see them in a lot more detail. You know what I mean? It opens up so much. So that was the point for me that I thought, you know what, AI, it's got its drawbacks, and rightly so, some people are worried about how far it can go and how it could be used for negative things, but actually it can also have a lot of good. And I think this is one huge example of how it's actually going to be helpful for people like myself with no sight or low vision. So I'm very excited to see where it's going to go in the future.
Can you explain how AI works for generating audio description? What's been your process from kind of start to finish, and how much control do you have?
So generating audio description is a bit of a different kettle of fish to just doing photo descriptions, because obviously a photo is a still image. So, it can focus on that one thing that's happening there. Obviously, with a video, there's lots of moving elements and there's lots of different things happening. So I really want to play around with this. And for the example that I've used is I wanted to sort of recreate my intro to my YouTube channel, which is to a blind person, is basically music with a little bit of background noise. So, for example, at the very beginning, you can hear myself and my 3-year-old son sort of going wee as we go down a toboggan at a local attraction. So I know what that is, but I kind of obviously thought about it a bit more, and anybody else watching it who's visually impaired or blind, and I know a good percentage of my viewers are, they don't have a clue what that is. So I thought, I wonder if AI can actually help me provide a bit of audio description here. So I got working away with it. And one thing I did find very early on is, unfortunately, there's no quick way of doing this at this moment in time. This may change in the future, who knows? But I can't just put it into one app and be like, okay, audio describe this and overlay it over the video and it's ready to go. So it had to be a bit of a mashup of some different apps and then working with it myself to get it to work correctly. And I made it hard for myself to begin with, because obviously in this video that I did work with, it's a 25 second clip, so it's not long, but it's got about 5 or 6 different clips within that. So there's a lot of changing of scenes and a lot of different actions happening. So there was a challenge involved with that.
Nathan rides a toboggan with Oliver. Next, a giraffe stretches its neck over Nathan and others in the back of a safari truck. Then Nathan plays blind football. Then pet dog Alfie is running around agility equipment with Emma. Next, Nathan is walking along a pavement with Oliver, being guided by his black Labrador guide dog, Abby. Finally, a close-up of newborn baby Harry, blind dad and family.
What I did, using the app, now I don't know whether the pronunciation is correct. It's VoiceOver pronounced it as PixieBot, or it could be PickyBot, but it's PicyBot. It's available on the app stores. And that provided the initial description for me. Now, I actually needed to rely on this, because when I made the intro video to my YouTube, it was back in 2023. And I've actually forgot what some of those clips were myself. So I needed to know what was in that intro and in what order. So PixieBot gave me that information, but the information that gave me was very, very detailed, which was good, but it was also 100 seconds long, and I had to condense this into a 25 second clip. So I took the information provided from PixieBot and wrote my own little script. And then using 11 Labs, which is a text-to-speech AI generation, I put my script into that feature, which then generated the AI. As you can imagine, the first time round, it generated, I think it was about 38 seconds long. So then I had to work with the script to make it 25 seconds and fit it within the, you know, within the actual video clip itself. So it was a challenge, but I was amazed of, first of all, the detail I got from Pixiebot, which is the bit that I needed to, as a blind person doing it myself, to generate the actual audio description script, but then the actual quality from 11 Labs to do the narration, I was quite blown away with, to be honest.
Right, 11 Labs gives you the voice.
Yep.
Yeah. Have you had any feedback? I mean, what's been the response from your viewers? You mentioned that some are themselves visually impaired. Has any feedback surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, as of recording this, you know, I only dropped this yesterday. I put it on socials and obviously uploaded it onto YouTube as well. And a lot of people have, first of all, I think they're more impressed with how it's actually being made, because it's been made using AI. You know, I haven't sat down with somebody else in the what will be known as sort of the old-fashioned way, where somebody's actually recording the voiceover whilst watching it, or you know, they're doing the work. This is actually a computer-generated, you know, audio description. So I think a lot of people are very sort of impressed in the quality that it's actually provided. And a lot of people are interested in doing that. So, I mean, my next video that I'm going to start creating today or tomorrow, it will be a bit of a tutorial of exactly how I did it. So hopefully people can integrate it in, you know, in their videos, whether they're, you know, just uploading to Facebook or YouTube or wherever, or even for personal use. It's something that could actually be very helpful going forward. So, you know, my plan is to try and integrate it more in the vlogs that I do, you know, with the knowledge that I know, you know, I do have a decent percentage who are visually impaired watching as well.
You mentioned that obviously you edited the original script for brevity, but AI sometimes struggles with context or nuance. How well did the AI capture those subtleties of some of those scenes in that sequence? You know, did it kind of pick up on, you know, emotional or facial expressions, and how much did you need to tweak that?
To be honest, it was a lot more accurate than it was 2 weeks ago. So that's how fast I think things are developing. A lot of credit goes out to the developer of Pixiebot. I know he's very active on social media and he's always working on the app and listening to feedback. And I think this will be the same for other apps going forward too. You know, AI is always learning. So the more we use it, the more we can feedback, the better it will become. Specifically to the video I made, I think the only mistake it made, and I think you can forgive it in this instance, was one part of the video. It's about three or four seconds long, and it's my partner doing agility with our pet dog Alfie, and the only mistake it made was referring to him as a husky instead of a border collie. But bear in mind, he's also running around an agility course. I think I can sort of you know, pardon such a mistake like that. But the great thing is about AI and this method is that you've always got the option to correct it. So using the you know the text box that you would add in your prompts, etc., just by simply saying, you know, the dog's called Alfie and he's a border collie, not a husky, it was very easy to correct that. So the next time it generated the description, it did it correct. So, and it's the same with photos. I love using Be My Eyes to generate the descriptions for photos, and I've had a couple of comments on just on Facebook in the last couple of days of, you know, how do you get so much detail into the descriptions? And again, it's by giving AI a bit more information. So you get the initial description, which is great, but what I then do is I'll be like, okay, the man is called Nathan, he's 30 years old, he's with his two children Oliver and Harry, who are 3 and 1. And by doing that, I then put at the end, incorporate this into the full description. And that's the important bit, because that's the bit that's the prompt to tell AI, okay, I've given you this information, I want you to rewrite that description and include it in what you've just told me. And then it does it for you. So the next thing you've got is a very detailed image description or video description just by giving it a bit more information.
Are you concerned about ethical challenges? You know, we've heard it said that, you know, AI can reinforce stereotypes and biases. And obviously there needs to be a kind of a human element to that. Do you perceive that as a risk? Is it something that you're alert to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've not really encountered any issues myself as of yet. But as mentioned, you know, AI is always learning. Doesn't mean it's always learning the correct thing. So over time, I think we are going to encounter some, you know, some issues or some things that need addressing. But I think there's that many different organizations working with AI now, and a lot of money is being plowed into it, and there's a lot of potential. I think as long as we can expect some teething problems and not be sort of surprised by them and too much, I think we should be able to deal with them and move on, and they'll be quickly corrected. So I'm not overly concerned, but I'm aware that things like that can be an issue going forward. But I think we'll be okay. I think AI and those who are working with it will be able to keep on top of any issues like that.
How does the quality of AI-generated descriptions compare with those created by human audio describers, in your view?
I think when it comes to sort of things like TV programs and movies, there's always going to be a need for human voiceovers and human sort of interaction. The same with audiobooks too. I don't think anything is going to be a real person doing the narration, especially if it's their own audiobook and they're doing their own narration. You know, for example, reading Michael McIntyre's autobiography, loved it. He narrated it, and I think that adds so much more to the book itself. But I think, for instance, like myself, who's creating videos on YouTube, obviously I don't have a massive budget. I don't have a budget at all to work with. So I can't go and pay somebody to sit down, watch my video, write a script, and then pay somebody X amount of pounds per word to then do the narration and then get it all edited. So I think for sort of amateurs like myself, using AI and the quality it provides will be a game changer. And what that should mean is that hopefully more things on the internet can become accessible because there's more options out there. But I wouldn't necessarily myself personally want to see it replace, you know, your professional voiceover artists and people like that who do the harder stuff, your TV programs and your movies and your audiobooks.
Right, but there's potential, of course. I mean, how do you see this technology potentially benefiting other platforms or media?
Yeah, there's certainly potential. Like I said, especially for those who don't have a huge budget. So anybody who falls into sort of that category can use this technology to their benefit. And like I say, the more that use it, the benefits are there for ourselves as visually impaired people to make this sort of content more accessible. Like I say, that just the difference of just photo descriptions. And I remember a few years ago when Facebook and Twitter, or now known as X, added the option to have alt text on images, like that felt then like a massive game changer and actually opened up to, you know, the platforms to be more accessible. Now, yes, that still requires the human element on the other side to actually go through the effort to complete the alt text to make it accessible, but it's a step in the right direction. And I think over time, when Apple Intelligence is integrated and Gemini into Android as well, I think we'll find a lot more of this being automated. So there'll always be the need for people to make their things more accessible, but these machines that we actually have in our hands will be able to do a lot of it itself, which I think will be a massive help for people like ourselves.
Do you think this experience with AI-generated audio description will influence the way you approach making videos in the future?
Yep, 100%. I mean, it already has. Just the fact that now you know, this was just a test with the intro video, but now I know it works, and the fact that I've had such positive feedback as well, I've used the tools, I know I can make it work. All right, it was a little bit sort of pernickety to begin with. I had to do a lot of sort of trying this out, trying that out, and a lot of moving things around to get it to work how I needed to, but it did work. So, you know, going forward, I'll certainly be integrating more audio description into videos that I produce. And even if, you know, it's more for my own benefit as well. You know, I always sit down with my family on many occasions, because we do like sort of family vlogs. So, for example, you know, the videos that I'm just uploading at the moment are all from our last holiday in Florida. So we've got lots of things happening there. And we always sit down with our children and say, oh, this time last year we were here, should we watch the video? And now I can integrate a bit of audio description in that. So the things that I may have forgotten, like, oh, there was a statue of a dinosaur over there. All right, that was in the video clip, but visually, or if I haven't mentioned it in audio, which I do try and do anyway, but if I've missed that, the AI will pick that up and then I can, you know, add that in as audio description. So I think it's going to benefit myself, obviously, but hopefully the viewers will get a lot more from it too.
For other creators who want to be more accessible and inclusive but are not sure where to start, are there any specific tools or resources that you'd recommend?
I think it's being aware of what could help. I mean, there's one thing, I still really want to, you know, work on subtitles on my videos, but because I'm not from that sort of, you know, I'm very much within the blind world, not the the hearing world. So at the moment, I don't really know how to do that myself. So obviously, a lot of research on the internet, but again, ChatGPT, ask it, and it gives you a lot of advice on what you can do. So I think a lot of it is being aware of what could help. So, you know, obviously, I'm well aware that audio description is going to be helpful for people. So because of that, I've then looked into what I can do using the tools that are available these days to generate that. So, you know, that was the first part, realizing that I needed to do it. The second part was, okay, what's out there to help? So I knew Pixabot was available. I knew what I could do. So using that and the other tools like ChatGPT, amongst others, enabled me to put that together. So it is possible. You just sometimes need to do a bit of research into it beforehand and try and put yourselves in the shoes of others. You know, if you're sat there watching it with your eyes closed, how is that coming across to the viewer, for example? So that's what I did with my intro. You know, I like I say, even though I'm blind myself, I even forgot half of what was in that clip. So I thought, okay, if I'm forgetting that and I made it, obviously the viewers aren't going to know what's in that. So yeah, it was time to put some audio description on it.
And there are a couple of forums now as well popped up on Facebook. I see there's a AI productivity group. So places like that might be a good starting point if anyone's got questions about how to use AI to be more productive and maybe even create audio description as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some great groups now popping up, focusing on AI specifically. But you've also got sort of blind YouTuber groups. So if you are on sort of the YouTube platform, there's other blind YouTubers you can connect with and things like that. So there's definitely certain options out there on social media where you can get support, which I think is great in this day and age.
Well, this is very cool, Nathan. I'm really excited about your clip, and I'm looking forward to hearing what's next. What is next for you in terms of AI and accessibility? Have you got any sort of new features or projects percolating away there in your back of your mind?
I'm always like that. Sometimes I get no sleep at night because you get an idea and you want to run with it there and then. But I think I'm excited to see what happens coming forward. You know, we're getting Apple Intelligence coming very soon. So for those with Apple devices, it'll be intriguing to see what this brings to us, what new features, and how much is actually going to be integrated directly within the phone, so you don't have to actually go and use third-party apps. So that'd be good. But I think for me, I don't know if you saw it yourself, Dave, but a couple of months ago, OpenAI released a bit of a sort of teasing video of AI vision in its sort of in process, where your phone could be recording a video and AI is watching it with you, and you can interact with it there and then and say, oh, what is this on, you know, in my hand? And it'll tell you there and then. So that is what I'm excited for. That's what I'm waiting for to come available to the general public, because I think that could be for navigation, going out and about and finding things in your home, and mobility wise, that could be a game changer.
Yeah, that was ChatGPT for Omni, the clip with the guy at Buckingham Palace where the AI recognised that the raising of the flag meant the king was in residence, and also described the arrival of a taxi. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see if it works quite as well as it does in the video.
Yeah, I say that's very finely polished, so who knows? But either way, I'm looking forward to at least playing around with it. And like I say, I think 2 years ago or even a year ago, you wouldn't have thought of anything like this actually being a possibility. So who knows where it'll take us.
Indeed. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for joining us. Anyone interested in checking out your YouTube channel and hearing some of that AI-generated audio description, how do we do that?
Yeah, so please head over to YouTube. We are Blind Dad and Family, and you can find us on many of the social networks as well. But yeah, hopefully you'll come across and enjoy what we produce, and with AI helping us as well, we'll be able to make it a bit more accessible too.
Nathan Edge, blind YouTuber, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to Nathan Edge for sharing his efforts to use AI to make his YouTube content more accessible. Jackie, Callum, Hubert, what do you think about audio description and the use of AI? Because some of the early efforts weren't great, but it's getting a lot better now, isn't it?
They weren't great. I remember hearing some of the some shows on, I think it might have been Amazon Prime, maybe. I can't remember specifics, but you could definitely tell they were done with AI, or TTS at least, you know, text-to-speech. Really robotic, really, you know, tried to kind of put expression in, but it didn't really work. It was all in the wrong places, and I couldn't watch it, to be honest. It sounded terrible. But that little clip then of it describing his YouTube title sequence, I mean, I couldn't tell that that was AI, to be honest. And I think I've heard that voice before as well.
I've heard worse human audio description, you know? So yeah, we are getting to that point. I mean, it needs to be curated, right? You need somebody to kind of oversee it and make sure that what's coming out is of sufficient quality. So there do need to be some quality checks in place, obviously, but we're getting there, aren't we, Jackie?
Yeah, I don't think we're quite there yet, but you've got to start somewhere, and I think it will be a thing. I have noticed in some adverts, just now and again, there's like a voice that comes in on some of them. You know, it sounds as if it's synthesized. There's something different about the voice in it that I always say, oh, that's AI, or that's a robotic voice kind of thing, even though it's been designed to sound like a real person. It's just the odd time in an advert I've noticed that. But we've got to go with it and see where it takes us. As you say, as long as it's curated properly, and you know, there are checks that they don't just bung anything out on it, because you know, you get used to some of the audio description voices. If you watch regular programs like soaps, you do get regular voices on there, and yeah, it'll be interesting.
Hubert, are you happy with AI describing your movie and TV shows?
I think I agree with what's been said. I think I do quite like it. I think personally, the one we've heard just now was impressive. I was very impressed. I've heard some, you know, interesting descriptions last year. Again, not of the greatest quality, but I think it's really going in the right direction. And sure, there's a concern because obviously, you know, there's a lot of human audio describers that, you know, might not be having a job at some point. But I have to say, I'm really impressed. It's slowly getting to the stage where you can see these descriptions being featured more and more often, and the landscape changing.
Well, let us know, what do you think about the role of artificial intelligence in audio description? Are you concerned? Have you got questions? RNIB has an immersive media team, so we can put those questions to them. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Jackie, Callum, Hubert, thank you very much. Like many of you, of course, we have been following the discussion around RNIB's transformation and the changes to technology support provided through RNIB's Technology for Life team. We've asked RNIB for a statement, and here it is.
RNIB's Tech for Life consultation has now finished, and we'll share more information in October once the new structure and appointments are in place. During the consultation process, we've listened to and taken on board a number of suggestions from the counter-proposals from those impacted. We will continue offering digital supports for our customers in a sustainable, enhanced way that allows us to meet the tech and digital support needs of more customers.
Callum Stoneman joins me now. Callum, where do you go for your technology support?
So for me, when it comes to tech support, there's a lot of community resources out there. So we've been speaking a lot about Apple Viz lately. They're brilliant for obviously all things Apple, but they've expanded their forums recently to include, I think I'm getting this right, I haven't got the list in front of me, but Android, Windows, and assistive technology more generally as well. I think there might be another thing on there about smart home technology. So they've got a few forums that you can go to and you can ask questions about, you know, various different topics. Obviously that has a bit of a focus on Apple, but they do have those other forums there as well. Social media is really good for support as well. So, you know, on the topic of community resources, there's a group called VI Talk on Facebook. That is a very popular group, and it's not a tech support group as such. It's more just generally for all things visual impairment, really. It's to connect with others in a similar situation, and friends and family members can connect as well. But you can ask tech questions in there, and, you know, there's quite a few technical people and people are more than willing to answer your questions. In terms of support from organisations, if an organisation has an accessibility team, then definitely use that. So for example, Microsoft have got the Disability Answer Desk. I've only needed to interact with them a couple of times, but every time I have, they've been fantastic, you know, really good knowledge of, as soon as you say to them, yeah, I'm using JAWS or I'm using NVDA or using Narrator, they straight away know what you're talking about, which is unusual, and can give you all the keyboard shortcuts and all the things that you need. Have a look through, if you can, if you're able to, have a look at Be My Eyes, because if you go to the Be My Eyes service directory, you will see some of them are just phone numbers. So they will offer you, you know, just general phone numbers to contact companies. But then there's a lot on there now that have signed up to offer support through Be My Eyes itself. So you can make a video call and you'll get a trained support member from that company. So they're worth looking into. Not quite as easy as being able to just dial a number and speak to someone over the phone. I'm not sure of any services like that, but there's a few options there if you're able to access them, or if someone is able to access them for you and ask on your behalf. They're worth looking into.
Thank you, Callum. And obviously, we understand this is a difficult time for everybody concerned. And of course, as we heard there in the statement, RNIB will continue to provide technology support, and we'll share that news as we get it.
As we do more and more of our, well, not just work, but I suppose our lives on the internet and on apps, there are laws around the world regulating them, and that also includes accessibility. But yes, there are still access problems for people who have sensory impairments or disabilities as well. But there are companies out there looking to help make those websites more accessible. User Vision are based in Edinburgh in Scotland, and we have with us Chris Rourke and Keith Allen to talk more about their work. Chris, tell us first of all a bit about the company itself.
Okay, well, User Vision started way back in 2000 when the landscape of everything digital was very different than now. We realized that often the weak link in people of all users in succeeding online was very often the design of the website. And that included just general usability principles, which were not really being adhered to very well, and certainly accessibility. We can still find many faults in accessibility now, but believe me, back in 2000, it was far more common, and people just were not really in general designing for accessibility. So with that, I started User Vision, which I still describe as a user experience consultancy. User experience, accessibility, and service design are our core areas. We do a lot of that as research with users to find out what their needs are. And then we assist in the design, the experience design, to make sure that what comes out the other side is highly usable and accessible in every sense of the word. And we have clients all around the world, quite a few different sectors, from finance to government and travel and charity and many different types. So which keeps us on our toes, keeps it interesting and exciting. And I've got a great team of consultants who help to do research with users, find out the issues, and advise our clients about what they need to do, often on their technical front ends, to improve these things. And accessibility is a key part to that. It's a main part to our business right now that it's always been there. And even in my naive early days, I thought, well, this accessibility thing, I suppose everyone's just gonna get their heads around it, sort it out, and maybe in 5 or 6 years, everything's gonna be accessible and probably won't be talking about that. Here we are 24 years later. And it is definitely very much, in fact, I just had a meeting where it was all about a big client really admitting that they don't know what to do about their accessibility. So it's, for better or for worse, it still is a challenge for many companies that we help in many ways.
I suppose they are recognizing that, though, and looking to make that change. There are things like the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines out there, but I suppose that there's still a place for you guys to help make those websites accessible, kind of, you know, almost run tests on their websites, make sure they're compliant, because it's important that they're compliant with the law as well.
Absolutely. So as in terms of testing it, Keith is our best place to do that, because he runs a crack team of people to really get under the skin in a far better way than I do, to understand the problems and most importantly explain that to clients in a way that they can take the next step of fixing it. So Keith, maybe give us an overview of that.
Certainly. Thanks, Chris. So our accessibility auditing process is in alignment with the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines to its latest version. That's WCAG 2.2. To level AA. And this is to help organizations identify any areas of accessibility barriers that prevent disabled people from being able to access and interact and engage with digital content. The audit process itself consists of three stages, the first being running automated tests. So this could be browser plugins to capture any sort of low-hanging fruit, issues with color contrast, which may affect users with low vision or color blindness. It could also capture form fields not being labeled correctly, which again impacts the way that blind users may engage with forms. But the problem with our automated tests is that they can only account for so many issues, that roughly 30% of all accessibility issues on a site. And that's why we really need to go in and inspect the service manually, using a series of browser plugins to help us identify what the issues are and to make sure that the service is compliant with all 55 success criteria in accordance to WCAG 2.2 to level AA. Now, the third stage is testing with assistive technologies as well. So again, this just shows our commitment to ensuring that the platform is as accessible and as compatible with as many user agents for the wide range of users that engage with these types of services. And these include things like screen readers, which I'm sure, Alan, you use every day, along with Dragon speech recognition software, tools like Zoom Text, so that's magnification software, among a whole host of other accessibility tools as well.
So a lot of work to do to check the sites over in the first place. I know you use, or you bring in people, you know, for our audience, for example, who are blind or partially sighted, to come in and help you with those tests. We'll talk a bit about that later. But you're getting people to come in and actually sit down with the websites, and they'll go through a task then to see where those faults are. I suppose it's valuable that you have other people come in and just do that, rather than you sitting there going through with tools.
Absolutely, this real life, real world experience of people that have lived experience with disabilities coming in and using these systems is imperative in the success of the accessibility of a service or system. And again, this an accessibility audit is designed to adhere to some guidelines, essentially. So certain government legislation, like the Public Sector Bodies Accessibility Regulations, or the wider European Accessibility Act within Europe, or the Equality Act as well within the UK. But this is it cannot compare to the real lived experience of users, and it can capture way more issues when we present these systems to people who actually live with these disabilities on a day-to-day basis.
Are your customers surprised when you go back to them with, you know, the list of faults which have to be repaired? Because, you know, I suppose for a lot of companies, especially I'm thinking companies who perhaps provide a service that they charge for, you know, they could be missing out on a massive customer base if their websites, their applications are not accessible. And that can be as simple as just maybe, as you mentioned earlier, edit fields not being, you know, visible or buttons not being labeled.
Well, I'll say, I mean, Keith puts together the reports and the reception of them. It does vary by companies. Some are keen to get stuck in and fix them. Others, well, I don't know. Sometimes we're often helping them out on a second pass, aren't we, doing with the with a check afterwards, and also with some training. Is that right, Keith?
Absolutely, yes. So often our reports can be a little daunting for design and development teams. There's an awful lot of issues that we capture, but we'd like to be as thorough as possible so that we can ensure that the service is as usable for as wide a group of people as possible. And that's in essence what the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines are designed for, to ensure that, you know, content authors, people that are creating websites, actually make things that are usable and useful for people with disabilities. So it can be daunting, but what we do within our reports is we try to prioritize the issues as well. So we've got priority ratings to help our customers identify and prioritize the fixes. So if it's a high severity issue, for instance, it could be a critical issue, it's been labeled in other places. It's something that would cause a complete blocker for one or more disabled user groups from being able to access the site or use it as intended. So using this categorization, it helps development and design teams to actually overcome these issues, along with our technical recommendations that again helps to ease that transition between identifying problems and making fixes.
Is it becoming more complex? You know, are your customers looking to add, say, more video, more audio, more images as well? So you're adding sort of more layers of accessibility in there rather than just, you know, a website that's just text-based.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the likes of the popularity of platforms like TikTok and Netflix, there's a trend to have more audio content, especially audio and video content that is auto-playing when you either scroll or hover over the icon. Now, this level of complexity, there are things that we can, you know, advise our clients to do to overcome the accessibility issues that are intrinsically linked to these sorts of platforms and this type of media.
It's I think, you know, that started years ago when you started having dynamic content. I remember first hearing about you know, rich internet applications, and gosh, how that's going to work if your page is constantly changing. It's not the simple model that it was, but that's just the start of it. That's become the norm now, pretty much on many sites with their dynamic content, and that brings up all sorts of ARIA challenges, as they'd call it. But yeah, with video content, you know, coming up audio content and good old standbys of like PDFs, for instance. There's a bit of content that's been around for a while, but I dare say that the majority of them are not really made to be accessible. And they're often the sort of I don't know, the one that many clients prefer not to talk about when we say, oh, by the way, do you have any PDFs on your site? Oh yeah, they're not really accessible at all, you know. So whether it's old stuff or new stuff, there seems to be no shortage of accessibility challenge. So my naive belief that, oh, this will all get sorted out maybe in a few years was way off the mark.
I suppose as you know, technology advances, so does the need for it to be more accessible as well. So, you know, you're kind of chasing the websites and chasing the technology as well. But as you said, Keith,
Yeah.
that human interaction, you know, you're getting people in, you're sitting with them, you're giving them tasks to go through, that's invaluable. I suppose you still look for people to get involved.
Absolutely, Alan. We have our we've actually started our own panel of expert testers. If you'd like to learn more about our panel and the opportunities that we can present to you, then we can share a link after this if you'd like. This is a great way to engage with several different usability projects. Again, we're just looking for insights from people's lived experience of disability to essentially go through tasks like usability in a usability testing environment. It could be linked to surveys or it could be interviews. It really does depend varying on project to project.
I'd say it's also interesting how, looking at the evolution of the whole field, many people are really trying to take it as a really as an opportunity. And it's not just, we've got technical problems and accessibility to fix, but if we get it right, let's let the world know about it. And I personally don't have a problem with that. They certainly should have, at the very least, an accessibility statement. But they, if they've done generally quite well, they can. Many people like to have this recognized through things like an accreditation. That's actually something we've started doing recently, is once we've given it a very thorough looking through and feedback on their accessibility audits, we can offer them an accreditation so they can say, right, it's been audited in depth by YouthVision on such and such a date, and here is the state that we got to, and hopefully very close to being very compliant with WCAG 2.2. And here's some proof of that. And the more we see of that, of clients sort of, puffing their chest out and saying, yeah, we've done well, and we're going to show that through our accreditation. I think that's a good sign that accessibility is being grasped as a net positive for many companies to shout about.
And let's hope things do go from accessibility strength to strength. Just finally, Chris, if people want to find out more about YouthVision and the work you do, the testing and so on, what's the best way to do that?
Okay, well, good old email. It's just hello@uservision.co.uk, and our website, www.uservision.co.uk. And as a phone number, we're based in Edinburgh, so our main number is 0131 225 0850. So our contact details.
Chris and Keith, thank you very much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, Alan.
That's it. We're at the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for your company. Be sure to tell a friend, like it, spread it, share it. And if you've got a question, comment, or anything else you'd like to talk to us about, you can write to Tech Talk, TECHTALK, at rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown, and Hubert Pavalkovich, bye for now.
See you next week.
See you soon.
Until next time.
Bye-bye.